John Dixon, Real 16.
Yes. So now I find myself at Aria Vibraven in Wiltshire, which was at that time was the headquarters of Air Support Command. And I became a member of the intelligence staff at the headquarters. And we had installed various top-secret equipment, which allowed us to have direct communications with the Ministry of Defence and other agencies. And we set up a very active intelligence setup there. And I became quite content with that particular post.
What's the function of support command of all the commands?
Air Support Command in those days, of course, had a number of groups. I had, I think, 46 group and 38 group. But they were tactical and support aircraft groups. And they controlled places like Lynham, as you know. And so we had both a tactical and transport role with the groups that we had to operate. And that was very interesting. The various tasks. So I went, I could go and visit some of the airfields and chat to the intelligence staff about any problems and things like that. So all in all, that worked out quite well, and I was quite content. And in fact, I was so content that I'd moved out of a quarter which we'd been given down at Melksham, which was an empty station, but they had so few quarters at Uphaven that they retained the one at Melksham, where we stood in the early hours of the morning in the winter trying to get on a bus to get up to Uphaven. But having said that, that was the only year. And so I gave up that quarter and moved into a private house which I bought in Uphaven, in the Devizes. And that worked extremely well. And so I was very content there. And then, much to my surprise,
could I just ask a second about the intelligence you organised? How did that differ from the other types of intelligence you're dealing with? What was the primary function of the intelligence for Air Support Command?
We were getting regular reports from the Cabinet Office and from the Ministry of Defence on the various activities that might be taken on our routes around the world. Any changes in the political structure, were there any difficulties being experienced? And in fact, one of the items, for instance, was when we got early information that of Tripoli, the king, I suppose, he was put out off the throne, if you remember, fled to one of the Arab states, and was taken over by the present occupant, who in Tripoli.
Is it King Idris?
That's right, King Idris, and that was the name of the airfield, of course, wasn't it? Yeah, Idris. That's the sort of information about what was going on in areas that we might be affected by, because we were using Tripoli and their airfields and so on. And in fact, I was on duty when the signal came in, and I thought perhaps there could be some implications here with the new boss taken over like that. And so there was an occasion where I had to go in and see the CNC and point out that we just received a signal pointing out that the king had been kicked out of office and that was now taken over by the NISC itself. Might cause a problem, particularly to the oil installations that we had down in the area. So that's a typical thing of what we would be monitoring closely for. That's on the transport side worldwide. We would be keeping our squadrons informed as to what was taking place, or if it was something serious, it might require some action. And then on the tactical side, of course, the 38 group, they were concerned, of course, with giving ground attack support to the army and helicopters and so on. So they were a very active group, can't remember whether we were involved in any fighting at that time. I don't think so. And I can't recall any. But that was with the sort of things on the tactical side. We had 38 group to look after as well. But then, surprise, surprise, I think I'd been there about a year when my promotion to squadron leader came through. And then I was posted again from my job.
So is this about 69?
Yes. No.
Early 70s?
69, yes. Yes. 68, 69. Yes. So yes, and now I enter the world of station administration because I'm posted to Cosford, where my post is officer commanding the station services squadron, which meant that all the strange jobs on the station became mine. And I had officers, the foreign officers, and to run the station. All the married quarters was one of the things came in under my umbrella. I was also made, for some strange reason, the officer in charge of the technical station on the station, which was to do with the ground equipment, of course, not aircraft. And so that came under my umbrella, and I was also responsible for all the work services associated with running the station, monitoring and approving and submitting things to command for funds or whatever it might be. And that kept me busy. That was a busy little job. My first job, in fact, where I was, much to my surprise, was when I was told to take over the new mess. I think I'd never taken over a mess in my life. What are they doing? They said, they built a new mess, and it's coinciding with your arrival, so you can go down and take it over from the works people. Oh. Yes, they said, then you will be responsible for signing the clearance to take over the mess from the works people. Oh. And it was, in fact, a lovely mess that they built. The old one was a typical wartime, but the new mess was a really lovely one with French windows and out under the door. So I had my first job, main job, was to take over the office mess.
And what was the kind of function of Cosford at that time? What type of airfield was it?
Well, it was, of course, an airfield, but there were no flying. Well, that's not quite true. We had a small flying unit there because we had some GD people, at pilots, and who were associated with training the apprentices and other areas of the station. So we did have a communications aircraft there, we had the School of Photography there, and at the time when we were also heavily committed with PT, physical training, also the major element there. We also had, of course, ground training for mechanics in equipment of various sorts associated with ground and flying side. Where the boys were trained in their particular trades. And then, of course, we also had what had been an enormous apprentice wing there, one of the largest buildings, I think, if not the largest, built in the area, which was occupied by the apprentices once they went through their years of training. We also had a hospital there. And so I was involved in whatever might affect my empire in these various jobs. We built a new sergeant's mess for them as well, so that kept the sergeants quiet. We also controlled the quarters at the empty station at RAF Regional, where we put a number of our people to live. So it was quite a busy job, really.
And how long were you in that posting for?
From when did I go there?
73.
We had a number, as you say, of hangars there, because of course I think in its wartime prime it had been a maintenance unit. And within some of those hangars we stored various aircraft that were associated with RAF Museum, and so they were tucked away quietly in Cosford for those years that I was there. Of course nobody ever visited them, or they never came out on display or anything like that, but it was all nice and dry inside the hangars, so it was an excellent place to store them. And of course one didn't ever dream at the time that I presaged the time when they would have this magnificent museum at Cosford, and that those aircraft would emerge. That was another little part of the job. One of those hangars, I recall, was used as an indoor horse rodeo place, where they used to do things with horses in there. As you know, they were vast inside those hangars, absolutely vast. And they were rented out somewhere. And another thing we had, they were quite vast. Because in the 1930s, they had this shadow aircraft production program, didn't they? And one of the places that was decided to build the aircraft was at Cosford. And so they built these vast, and I mean vast, by then standards of buildings, to build the aircraft in. I don't think they ever actually built any aircraft there, but it did mean that those hangars were put to various uses. One, of course, was for the athletics, wasn't it, which we used to see so much of on television. Well, they were part of our empire, keeping an eye on things there. And in other hangars, they loaned those out, but they were pretty well empty, but they were so big, couldn't do much with them. Yes, and we agreed to let it out once they were going to put an offer on them. And we agreed that they could come down from London to put this back. They wanted to put a vast offer on. And then Flossie's director died, so it never appeared. But so it was a very large station, still is. And I have been back and took to the museum there to see what it's like. But yes, it's a big station.
So you were there for a relatively long time in your career, weren't you?
A normal tour.
You left in 73, is that right?
Yes. Of course, I haven't mentioned to you, but my great hobby was acting. And I'd been acting for many years in Aden, Germany. Wherever I was stationed, I would appear in various plays. And I found when I got to Cosford that they had no theatre group there. So I set up a theatre group and put on a series of plays. That was very interesting. So if I have any notoriety whatsoever, it's only on the amateur stage in Cosford. But that was quite successful, really. Yeah, because it worked very well, and then unfortunately my wife hadn't joined me there because the house at Devizes, we'd only just occupied it and bought it, and we're trying to sort it out and do the usual things, so we decided that it would be better for her to stay there and sort things out than I would be separated for that particular tour, and then we'll see what happened. So I had an unaccompanied tour. coming back to the Devizes, of course, every weekend on Fridays, and back again for Monday morning. Seemed to work out all right in the long run. So that was that was my tour at Cosford. Busy and so on. And then I had a very strange posting then come up, which took me totally by surprise because I wasn't familiar with the organization at that time, with those places. And I was posted as RAF commander to an American base at RAF Chicksands, which is a non-flying base near Bedford. And I didn't know what it was, but I had to report there, and they told me I couldn't have the posting unless my wife accompanied me. So obviously that settled that particular problem, and I found myself at Chicksands. But I have no airmen. The only people I'm commanding is a lot of civilians, and in many cases, some of the civilians were explicitly employed by the Americans, whereas the other civilians that were around the base came under my control. And I was also the RAF commander of a major airfield in Essex, which was held on standby with an American combat group in the event of the Cold War, blowing up the wing would fly from America and occupy the airfield, which was fully maintained in every sense for counterattack in a strategic role. And I had that as well to look after. So I had to visit them periodically to see what was going on. And the Americans had about 250 men there, keeping the airfield intact. So that was nice. That was an extremely pleasant tour. I think I got on very well with the Americans. And I never had any difficulty there at all. And I occupied one of their quarters. And that was all very pleasant. And having the title of RAF commander meant that I was on the local society roll. So everything any happened nearby or at Henlow or whatever, or the sheriff of the county, but I would find myself with an invitation. It was all very pleasant.
Was that why they maintained that it had to be an accompanied tour, that your wife would be there for the social side of things?
Yes, that's right. Yes, it was indeed. It was to ensure that all these arrangements were kept like that. And it worked very well, actually. Because my wife got on very well with the Americans and joined them in their various activities and so on. And my parents' station was RAF Hendo, and so I would have the station commander over to Chicksands as my guest when I put on some sort of functions. They were very good, the RAF. They allowed me £10 a month for my social costumes.
Was that a 2-year posting then again? Is that 73 to 75?
Yes, but it was strange. Coming up to my normal end of tour, which is usually about 2.5 years, I had a phone call from the Minister of Defence, and they said, we're thinking of posting you. And I said, oh, because I knew it was my last appointment, and then I was, of course, would be retiring. And they said, we know you've got a house in Devizes. How would you like to go back to RAF Uphaven? Well, I was having a nice time with the Americans, and things had been very pleasant, and I'd made some quite good friends there. And it was very difficult to make a decision. They said to me, they gave me the option, they said, if you like, you can stay at Chicksands until you retire. I was sorely tempted. Chicksands, you see, was, you know about Chicksands, didn't you? But Chicksands was an intelligence listening post, and it was capable of monitoring Russia, at least East Germany, and some of the other satellite countries from the aerial system, which was a 360-degree monstrous aerial to lay up on top of a hill, that huge thing. Well, using that aerial system and other technology, the Americans were always aware of the activity of the Russians in the air, in particularly in sensitive areas like Berlin or whatever they did. And so it was a hush-hush post again, which I didn't have to be involved in very much, occasionally, but not generally. They just got on with their job, and I was aware of what was going on. So that, all in all, it had been a rather nice post-flight, just flying. But the RAF Ensign flew over the station, and I, of course, they have to have an RAF commander because they had to ensure it was clearly understood with it. The Americans never had an airfield in this country. The terms of their engagement were they were on RAF soil. The RAF flag would fly. There would be an RAF commander there. So they were just visitors, in effect, on that bed. Nothing to do with possession of any sort. And that's why they had to have an RAF commander there. And it wasn't too demanding a job by far. So we come back to the question then. I've done my time there, or coming up to finish when this talk from my day. I gave it some thought anyway, and I thought, well, it's been very pleasant here, but I ought to get down to reality now. I've got to retire sometime, and I'm going to retire to Devizes, and it might be as well if I go back there. So I overcame the business of staying, and some people wanted me to stay. And then in 1975, I was given a remarkable farewell function and party by the American base commander, who was a colonel. And they put on a function to say goodbye to me, which was very, very good. And they presented me with a quite remarkable. Yes, they were at my farewell party. They presented me with a plaque which they had obtained from America, and in effect thanking me for what I'd done during my 2 years with them. And my wife as well, of course. And they also gave me another little plaque which accompanied, which showed Chicksands Priory, because Chicksands Priory was actually located on the base, and a quite remarkable building, built in, I think, in the 12th century, a strange RAF station. So, yes, things had been remarkably well at Chicksands, and I left there with a lot of regrets. But then I'm sent back to Uphaven for my last appointment. And I was sent there originally to command a wing which had been set up at the station, which dealt primarily with the function of the station rather than what the station's role was. But when I got there, I was then told that in fact I was being sent there as the commanding officer of the station. So my last appointment in the service was as commanding officer of Royal Air Force Station Uphaven. So somehow or another, in a very short period of time, I'd moved from Uphaven on my first posting when I went as a flight lieutenant, a very unhappy junior officer. From that posting, I didn't like it, Leighton Buzzard, to finding myself now the commanding officer of RAF Uphaven.
What's the role of a commanding officer of an RAF station? What do you have to do?
Yeah, quite a lot, really. Responsibilities are quite wide. Well, I'm responsible for all aspects of the administration of the station, both in its technical and the administrative and personnel side, and the account side, equipment side, all come under the personal responsibility of the commanding officer, which meant I had a headquarters building manned up by my own staff, dealing with problems of security, personnel, admin, accounts, marriage quarters, motor transport, messes, were all my personal responsibility. It's nothing unusual about that. That's the role of a commanding officer in those circumstances. What had happened, well, when I got there, air support command had gone. They'd gone into the darkness and been disestablished. It no longer existed. And I found myself with 46 group who were occupying the buildings that had been occupied by air support command. And they had a similar role to air support command, except I think they were concentrating on the transport side, because 38 group, the other group, were down at Odeon at that time. And so my first acquaintance with 46 group as a commanding officer of the station, and I found that with an excellent group and good officers, and morale was good, and it was very good. But then unfortunately, was 46 group also was disestablished and disappeared into thin air, and their place at Uphaven was replaced by headquarters 38 group, who now had moved up from Odeon to occupy the things, and so the cycle worked. But 38 group weren't the same sort of group of people as 46 group, and they were not the easiest thing. So I had to deal personally with the air officer commanding the group, who were in effect I parented them. They were a lodging unit on my station, and that was the relationship, as it had been with 46 group. So during my period as commanding officer, I had 46 and 38 groups on the station, and that was quite good. It was quite a busy job. I didn't have a very large staff of men, about 80 or 90, and several officers running the various components on the station, the equipment, MT, technical, that sort of thing. And then it just came to a period where it was time to go. When I went there first, I'd occupied a married quarter on the station, and there, of course, as is always the case, it's like this: the CO has an ex officio quarter. But it was the wrong term in my career, coming right at the end. I didn't occupy the CO's quarter, because my wife was now occupying her own house on turning devices. And it was, in a way, an inappropriate ending. I should have had been exercising that sometime earlier, so that I could do the proper things, live on the station, and do the usual things. The commanding officer's wife, as you know, has activities with the airmen's wives and the officer's wife, and that didn't come about.